building up a generation. Plant seeds for a new foundation. Take you from rags to riches. Right now, gonna build these bridges. Straight facts, cutting through the airwaves. No limit, making gold from your spare change. Cash flow rolling in like a riptide. Let's go, now's the time. You came for the remedy, leaving a legacy. Real money radio, a future you can hold.
All right, good morning. Roy Matlock Jr. here, and you're listening to Real Money Radio and with Tanya Escobel. Tanya's out today, so you get to hear from me, and we're going to be talking about things that matter to you when it comes to your money. And if you're just tuning in for the first time, Tanya is real estate and mortgages. I have been financial advisory forever, just like she's been doing the same thing there. And we brought this show together with the idea that, you know, we're going to make the full circle on all of that and get good questions answered. And so you can visit realmoneyradio.info. If you need help with real estate, mortgages, anything like that, you can click and find Tanya. If you need financial advisory or anything like that, you would click to Roy Matlock. It would take you over to roymatlockjr.com. And so today what I thought I would do is kind of start with, you know, I've been doing this for 40 years helping people with their money, and I see a lot of questions that come up that always people ask me these same questions, and so I thought I would come up with 10 of the questions that I typically get. And then the other thing that happens is we're going to have some lightning round questions at the end, so I think it should be very informational. As you listen to this today, you're going to be in different situations in life. I always tell people that, you know, what I do is, as a financial advisor, is I plan for from birth to after death. And that's the idea of what we do with money. And if it comes to money, what I like to say that I can do is I've got answers. And those answers either are something that we do ourselves, or I have a network of partners that are qualified in areas that maybe I don't do. And so today's show should be about all things money. And so I'm going to start out with one of the first questions I get for people. They say, should I pay off my mortgage early, or should I invest the money, the extra money instead? All right. And how does it make sense, and how do interest rates change the picture? You know, one of the things that I've always believed is this, is that we make money by spread. All businesses are based on spread. Everything in life, there's a spread. If we open up a restaurant, we buy it for one price, all of our you know, cost of food, and then we look at the cost that we have to produce the product, and we create a spread or a profit margin. And that's how we go about living life. I mean, we do the same thing with our income. We take our income and we say, okay, we need to spend less than what we make and have a little spread in there, a little gap in there. And so when you're trying to figure this stuff out, what you have to first realize is when your mortgage rate, whatever your mortgage rate is, if you pay it off, that is the rate of return you're getting on your money. All right, so let's think about this. If you're getting if you currently have one of the low interest loans, there's people that had as low as 2.6%. When you pay that mortgage down, you're getting 2.6%. And you say, well, if I'm getting 2.6% by paying it off, is there a place I could take that additional money and put it, and then I would get more than 2.6% and I would create a spread? And so I'm going to give you some examples. If we go historically back into the stock market, and I'm a big stock market believer. I've been putting people into investments now. I got my securities license over 40 years ago, and I've been putting people into that. When I first got started, I remember early on in 1987, had the stock market crash, and I just invested money for my brother-in-law, and the market crashed like a week later, and he's like, what is going on here? You know, that kind of stuff. And I would tell him, don't worry about it. It always recovers. Well, at that time, I had no life stories. I was brand new. And the only thing I could do is say, theoretically speaking, based on what I've read and what the history says, it will always recover. But since that time, I've gone through 1987. I've gone through 2007. I've gone through, you know, many of the tech crash. I've gone through all that kind of stuff. And after it's all said and done, the market has averaged about 10% long term. And if you get into some good managed funds, you can get more than that. So now your question is, does it make sense to pay off a 2.6% loan and get 2.6% return? Or would it be better if I'm going to put extra money into something, put it into an investment? I call it an opportunity fund. And that opportunity fund would be something that you could get to, not necessarily put it in your retirement fund, but something you could get to that's invested. You know, I think it's a pretty simple decision. Never pay off low interest mortgages. It makes no sense. I have my former co-host, Dave Ramsey, has been telling people this, and I think it's some of the worst advice that's ever been given. All right, when we first went on the radio, he and I were on the radio in the early 90s. You know, we had people that had 10 to 12% loans on their home. And so it's different. You know, today, if you're getting if you got a 6% mortgage and you decide to pay it down, well, you're at least getting six and a half. I think right now a mortgage is about 6.25 to 6.75, depending on if you have a 15 to 30 year mortgage. That's where you can reach out to Tony. So the question is, does the strategy make sense? And I hear people, they say, well, yeah, but here's what's going to happen. All right, when I get through paying the house off, I have that whole payment that I can do something with. Still, it's the math. The math is the numbers. It's the interest rates. So what I always tell people is don't pay your mortgage off when you have low interest mortgages and even a 6% loan. I don't see it as a good idea. Here's the other reason I tell you not to pay it off is that it becomes illiquid money. The only way you can get that money back out, if you have an opportunity, is you get to borrow it or you have to sell the house. And so would it make sense to pay a 3% loan off and then have to go get an 8% second mortgage to get the money back out so you could have an opportunity? Or would be better off just pay your mortgage and the money that you were going to invest to it, set up an automatic account where it pulls out of your checking account every month. You say, well, I was going to pay $500 a month on my mortgage. Instead, what I would do for you is set up a $500 a month draft into like a, you know, a balanced fund, something that's got stocks and bonds in it that, you know, you could get to. And if you need the money for an opportunity, that's what I call it, opportunity money. Let's go get it and let's go buy a rental property, or let's go, you know, let the money just grow or start a business or whatever it may be. So that's the first of my questions. And I get these questions all the time. And I'm telling you that my recommendation, if you have a mortgage, just pay your mortgage payment, and if you have extra money, put it into something you can get to that's going to beat the spread. Mm-hmm. Second question that I get, Roy, how much money do I need to really be able to comfortably retire? All right, what is the target number? How do I turn that into that savings into income? And so what happens when we're in the accumulation stage, if I ask you a question, I say, how much money do you have in all of your accounts? You're going to come up with a number. I've got $800,000 or whatever it may be. And so once that happens, it's a very clear mindset. You start out, you say, I've got $300,000, I have $500,000, whatever it is. I'm 62 years old and I've got $700,000. You know, what is that? So that is a number that doesn't really it matters. Clearly, the more you have, the more you can do something with. But the real question is what is the number you need to get an income back out of it? And so when I talk to people, I ask the first question is, how much do you need to comfortably live right now? You know, and you're going to have probably Social Security coming in at some point in time. Maybe you have a pension, so we can deduct those kind of things out that would pay for life. And then we come up with the amount of income you need net of that. And I have clients that come back and they say, well, I need, you know, I'm going to get $5,000 a month between husband and wife on Social Security, and I don't have a pension, and I need $10,000 a month. So when you need $5,000 a month, and you need $10,000 after taxes, yeah, okay, your Social Security is going to be taxed if you're making that kind of income. So let's just put a number at $12,000. So you need $12,000 a month. We multiply it out. For safe numbers, we're looking at $150,000 a year. So you want to have $150,000 a year, do nothing money. The way I've always looked at it is you take and multiply that times 16 to 20, and that's going to give you your financial independence number. So what does that mean? So for easy math, if you needed 100, all right, you would need 1.6 to 2 million. And once you had that, you could take that money and at 6% of the year in balance, that's one way of doing things, 6% you adjust every year. What that means is if the market's up, you get a raise. If the market's down, you pull less. That's 1/16th, 1/17th of your money that you're pulling. And if you're getting 6, 7, 8%, 8% was a typical stock bond, 8, 9%, you're going to have a little bit of inflation hedge. Another safe money number is you pull 4%. And 4% would give you, that's at 20, a little less than that. You need about 20 times your income to be able to do it. So what we're talking about is 16 to 20 times your income. How do you multiply and get more income? Well, there's some strategies. One of the strategies that I talk to people about is go ahead and draw your Social Security if you're still working and you hit full Social Security age, and let's save it. And if you're capable of working, continue to work. Unless you just hate it. So 3 years of Social Security might represent for someone, another $100,000 that they were able to save and invest. So we would draw the Social Security and invest the Social Security. Starting at, if you're not working, you can draw it even sooner. But if you are working, you're going to want to draw it once you hit your full Social Security age, 66, 67. So we do that. Then you say, what are some other options? Well, you've heard of annuities. So I typically tell people that you buy an annuity for lifetime income if you're a little behind or barely okay. And what this allows you to do is to take a piece of your income and or a piece of your assets and put it into a lifetime income guarantee. So if you bought an annuity, a typical annuity age 67 might get 7, 7.5%. So what would happen is you would take that annuity and you would say, I've got $700,000 saved. What I'm going to do is I'm going to take $200,000 of it and it's going to get 7.5%. And so then the other $500,000 that I have invested in the market, I can be a little more aggressive with it and I'll use that for later. But the idea is that the annuity, if you're lucky, will have no money left. That means you lived a long time. And so I hope this is helping. We've got 10 questions. My name is Roy Matlock Jr. You're listening to Real Money Radio. Go to realmoneyradio.info. You can reach myself or Tanya Esquivel, who's out today. But you can reach us. We'll be right back. All right, we're back. Roy Matlock Jr. here. If you're tuning in today, my partner on the show today, Tanya Esquivel, is out. So you get to hear just from me today. We're going to be talking money about 10 questions that I get asked as a financial advisor. If you'd like to reach either Tanya or myself, realmoneyradio.info is the way you do that. You can click and find out. And one of the things that if you go to Real Money Radio, if you click on my side, we've got the financial gap quiz. And what it's going to do is give you some ideas on how to find out where your gaps are when it comes to your money. So you might check that out. Anyway, so when we came out of the break, the question was, how much money do I really need to retire comfortably? Is there a target number? I call it the FIN, the F-I-N, the financial independence number. Typically, that number is about 16 to 20 times your desired income after you take into account some of your guarantees. A lot of people say, well, I don't want to count on Social Security. Well, then you just take and don't count that. And you say, I need 100 grand. Well, that's 2 million. All right. And so 2 million at 5% gives you 100 grand. And if the market's doing okay over a long period of time, which it does, you should be able to get a little inflation bump and never, run through your money. And so the idea is we find a target, then we need to calculate based on where you're at, and we put some assumptions in on your returns. So I've got 100 grand saved. I've got a goal 20 years from now to be able to retire. What is my financial independence number? Well, I would go in, I would calculate that. So your 100 grand is going to grow this. We're going to take your number right now, which is 2 million. We got to inflate it. So it's going to be, 3.5 million that you're going to need 20 years from now based on typical inflation. You've got 100 saved. We're missing 3.4 million. We've got 20 years. What's the financial independence number at 10%? And we go in and we calculate that. And we say, well, your financial independence number is $1,786 a month. So for $1,786 a month over the next 20 years at 10% interest, here's what's going to happen. You're going to have your financial independence number hit. And so we do that. A couple of little tools that you can go that are free. You can go to SEC.gov and you can go to their calculators. They're pretty good, and it'll show you, what you have, what you need, what you Can invest it at, put different interest rates in. It's a pretty cool little calculator. I'll give the SEC kudos on that because it is a good way of doing it. So then you are putting your turning your savings into income, all right? And then when we get out there to retirement, we're going to have different sources of income. And we can talk a little bit more about that in some of the later questions. So, but the point being is how much do I need to retire? All right. The next question, hey, am I saving enough money, for retirement if I'm just contributing to my 401k? Well, of course, everything is how much is enough. You know, that's the beginning. How much are you putting in? I always tell people on their 401k that you're getting free money. And so I see people not putting money in their 401k. I mean, come on, guys. You got a 401k, you're going to get some type of match. If you put in three and they match three, you just made 100% when you contributed. Plus, you get a tax deduction. All right. And so a lot of times I'll tell people that let's take the tax deduction on the 401k. You can put up a little over 20 grand if you're under 50. If you're 50 and up, you can put over a little over 30 grand. And you go in there and you say, well, I'm going to put 20 grand in. I'm going to deduct it. And I'm going to save 5 grand. Plus, I'm going to get my match on my first 3%, whatever it is. And so my 20 grand goes to 23,000 or something like that. That's pretty good. And then the 23,000, I'm going to take I'm not going to pay taxes on that 20 that I earned. So I'm going to get a $5,000 tax deduction. That's cool. I'm going to take the 5,000, I'm going to fund my Roth IRA. All right, so I just bought one and got one free. Everybody likes those kind of sales. Buy one, get one free, right? Let's buy the 401k or 403b at work and take the big deduction and then what? Get one free. I've got one of my clients right now that she is continuing to work, and all she does is make enough money to fund that $30,000 of retirement. So she's working now, continuing to work, and as a result of continuing to work, she's making 30 grand, puts it all in the 401k, has no income tax, gets a tax deduction. How about that? All right, that's pretty good. So that's the kind of stuff that you do when you work on it. Should I do a Roth? Yeah, you probably should have both. If you make high income, we can do what's called a backdoor Roth IRA. What is a backdoor Roth IRA? So you're making over $200,000, depending if you're single or married. You can look at the rules. But the point being is that when you put that money in, if you're qualified in a qualified plan, like a retirement plan through your work, you're not eligible for a Roth, but yes, you are. How do you do that? You do what's called a backdoor Roth. And we do that for our clients that are high income earners that still have extra money left over. I said, look, fund your Roth, fund your 401k, put your 30 grand in, whatever it is. And then once you do that, we take additional cash and we do what's called a non-deductible traditional IRA. What is a non-deductible traditional IRA? Well, you can put money in just like a normal IRA. You just can't deduct it, and it's not a Roth. But immediately we convert it to a Roth. Now it's going to grow tax-free from then on out. And so there's a lot of ideas on that. So should you have both? You should have that, yes. And I tell people, there's a lot of ways to skin it. When you get out there at retirement, you got Roths, you got traditionals, all right, meaning traditional deductible accounts. You've got Roths, which are tax-free. You've got some that are taxable. So you've got taxable accounts. You might decide to withdraw the taxable accounts first. Why would we do that? Well, the taxable accounts, if you put in 100 and it's worth 200, then that means there's 100,000 of gain. So if you pull that money out, you would be able to pull 200 and only pay taxes on 100. How about that? That's a way of looking at it. And then we can defer drawing on our tax-free or taxable accounts. And so there's a lot of ideas that go into saving for retirement. But one of the things that I always do is I tell people, look, if you get free money, take it. All right. I remember Trump, they handed him an airplane over there, and it's like a $1 billion airplane. I don't know. And they handed me an airplane. So guess what he said? I'll take it. All right. And that's what I do. If the IRS is going to give me the opportunity to get a tax deduction, and if my employer is going to give me free money, then take it. All right. Take advantage of it. Don't sit there and question it. Take it. It's a great, it's a good plan. So now the next part of that is when I'm doing stuff like that, what I want to do is decide, where am I going to invest it? And so typically it's very simple. I tell people that when you're young, everything's simple. All right. All you got to do, you buy term life insurance in case you die if you have kids. We'll talk about that in a second. And then what happens is you get an automatic bank draft put into a growth fund and you just let it rip and you just make sure every month something comes out of your paycheck and you're off to the races. When you get to retirement, though, and at near retirement, you got to start thinking, well, what if the market goes down when I first retire? That's called sequence of return risk. So what we're going to do then is we're going to have it allocated differently. Typically, if I do a review with someone, I'll look at where they're at. Let's say you're 55 years old and you've got $500,000 in your retirement account. And then I look at what you're going to be able to save over the next 10 years. And it's going to be, say, $30,000 a year. You're making money enough to do that. And that 30 rule of thumb, if you put in 30 a year for 10 years, that's 300. If we invested in a somewhat, reasonable, not too aggressive growth, but a growth fund, 10 years later, you put in 30 grand a year for 10 years, it's going to be worth double that. So if you put in 300, rule of thumb, you'll have 600. So that's one part of it. That's the amount of money that you have the ability to grow your retirement based on working. But then if you've got $500,000 already, then what I'm going to look at, so well, over the next 10 years, if we get 7%, you'll have $1 million. So what I may do in working with someone is be a little bit more conservative on the money we have and a little bit more aggressive on the money that we're investing, all right, into the retirement plan. Many times we have what is called target date funds. And if we have a target date fund, I'll pick the, 2035 or something like that, 2040. You know, if you're 10 years out, what that means that the way targets work is just for your own, if you're thinking, you take your birth year and add about 65 to it. So if you have if you're born in 1980, you might have a 2045 target. All right. If you're born in 2000, you might have a 2065 target. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to pick the target date or a little right near that on the lump sum, but then I may pick the target of 2070 for someone that's investing that money with the idea there'll be more volatility when dollar cost averaging, buy on the dips and stuff like that. You're listening to Roy Matlock Jr. and we are Real Money Radio. Tanya Escobel is out today, and if you want information when it comes to your money, when it comes to your mortgage, when it comes to your real estate, go to realmoneyradio.info, and you can click to find us both. We'll be right back. All right, we're back. Roy Matlock Jr. here, and you're listening to Real Money Radio. If you like the show today, go to our website, realmoneyradio.info. You can also access through any of your podcasts, realmoneyradio.info, and you can listen to our previous shows. And Tanya and I came together. Tanya had been on the radio for many, many years. You've listened to her real estate show, and what she does is she's in the mortgage business and the real estate business and has brought on some very interesting people that can help you with the real estate and mortgage side. I do financial advisory. I've been doing it 40 years, been on the radio forever as well. Went back on the air 2018. I have a show. Tanya also has a show outside of this. We kind of jumped together and did this. She's out today. And so I'm kind of going down the financial path with some questions that I get asked. I still meet with people and I still, keep my game going when it comes to that kind of stuff. I've got advisors that I train. And so I'm always looking for ways to explain things in a way that makes sense. And so far we talked about, should I pay my mortgage off early or invest the extra money? I always say invest it. Don't pay off your mortgage. How do I know how much money do I need to be able to retire comfortably? Typically your financial independence number, 16 to 20 times your income. Am I saving enough for retirement? If I'm just contributing for it, maybe you need to compare it to your financial independence number. Also, should you do a Roth? Should you do a taxable? Sometimes I tell you to do both, which allows you to make that happen. You can go to sec.gov and do some calculations on your own. You can also reach out to realmoneyradio.info and you can reach us. And we will help you get your financial independence number. I'm a financial advisor, and so we educate people and implement plans for people. Now, next question I have people, so how much life insurance do I need? You know, one of the things that's interesting, that I think is going on right now. And it's really not. It's always been this way. We've had police shows. And we've had, you know, all this kind of stuff going on forever. But, you know, the crime shows, I mean, they're every time you turn something on, there's a crime show. There's a, you know, 2020 and 48 hours and, you know, all these different, you know, forensic files and everything. And the interesting thing about all those crime shows, somebody had to die. Okay, for those things to make it to TV. I mean, I don't want to be the one that ends up being on the television show, but that's what happened. Somebody had to die. You turn the news on, somebody dies, all right? I mean, a tree falls on somebody, some freak accident. You can go on and on and on and on and on about it. And so, but we all know this. At the end of the day, it's either if or when, all right? If is an unexpected, all right? You say, oh, that's terrible. She was 34 years old, or, you know, she got cancer, or he got cancer, or it was an accident. They've got all this kind of stuff. Or it's when, and at eight, you know, if you're 85, 90 years old, 100 years old, my mother made it to almost 103. I mean, that's the when. And so, but there's a big difference between if and when. All right. So let's talk about the if. All right. So I always ask people this: if something were to happen to you prematurely, you have children and you have obligations, would you want to be fully insured so they could continue their lifestyle if something did happen? And you know what I get the answer to that is? Yes, I would like to do that. I don't want my kids to be, you know, along with a picture of the mom or the dad on GoFundMe. I don't want that. I want to make sure that they would be taken care of. All right. So that's the if. The when would be you wanted something that, hey, I want to have something left behind to clean up, you know, or if you're wealthy, I want to have something left behind so I'm not leaving my kids behind with estate taxes or whatever it may be. So there's two types of coverages. There's one for the if, that's called term insurance. It's the lowest cost. You could buy the most coverage for the least amount of money. I've always believed that term insurance overall, all things included, term insurance is the best thing to do. I've always believed that. I go back 40 years saying buy term insurance, invest the difference into something that will grow to where one day you've got cash and you don't depend on your income anymore. The term insurance can go away. All right, you can drop it. And so someone in their, you know, young couple, I always tell people if you have kids and you have a job, then you need term life insurance if they're dependent on you. And so someone 30 years old getting started can get $1 million of term insurance for less than $100 a month. I mean, there's no reason not to do it. It takes 10 minutes. You can go to my website and fill out one of the questionnaires, and literally in 10 minutes or so, you can get $1 million of coverage, no physical, no, you know, if you're in good health, you can do that kind of stuff. And so there's no reason not to have it. So how do we go about calculating how much life insurance do we need? There's one way of doing it. It's called DIME, D-I-M-E. The first one is death and the expenses that go along with death. I'm going to talk about that. Then you've got income replacement. Income replacement is the lost income. You're making 100 grand a year and your family is expecting that paycheck every other week. You get paid twice a month and they pay their bills. You pay your bills based on that. Everything is supported by your ability to earn money. So if that income went away, what would happen? Those bills would not go away. You've got a mortgage on your house. A lot of times people say, I'd like to have the mortgage paid. And then another question you can ask yourself, which would you rather leave behind, a mortgage or a house? All right. And so you need to think like that. And then lastly, you've got educational expenses. You know, we hear about student loans. Right now, the average state tuition, four-year tuition, along with room and board, is about $124,000, all right? And that, to me, seems cheap, really, for 4 years, $124,000, including going to school and eating. I mean, that's called beanie weenies all the way, but the bottom line is that's what we're talking about. So if you have two kids, about $250,000. So now what we do is we say, well, how much do we need? Well, let's start with the D. You die, all right? Here's what happens. You're going to have your final expense cost. Typically, there are medical expenses involved in that, other expenses going along. If you are at retirement and you're drawing Social Security and you're married, then you're going to lose a Social Security, all right? So if you have two social securities and you're getting $5,000 a month and something happens to one of you and they're both $2,500 apiece, you're only going to get the one of them. You get the largest one that's left. And so in many cases, people that at retirement, they want to have something. So they may say, well, I'm going to put $100,000, you know, have $100,000 of insurance that I keep. That would be what's called permanent insurance. We're talking initially, you're going to buy term. And what term does is it gives you the most for the least. All right. So we come up and we say, well, we're going to put aside $30,000 or $40,000 for final expenses. All right. And that would be burial, medical, any other expenses coming along, the time between receiving the life insurance and the claim, you've got bills, stuff like that. All right. So you got that. Income replacement, rule of thumb, you could add a zero to your income if you're making $100,000, $1,000,000. But we actually do a calculation, and you can find that calculation on my website, roymountlandjr.com. And what it does is it says, okay, you've got $100,000 a year income. We're going to inflate it over a period of time. You got 30 years left. Your income with no raise is going to be 30 times 100. That's $3,000,000. What is the amount of money in a lump sum needed today to be able to provide $100,000 a year with an inflation bump? And we have just a number. We go in there, we say, if it's invested at 8%, here's what you're looking at. All right. And we do that. All right. And so then we put all that together. We got our death, you know, and final expense. We got our income. We pay our mortgage off, and we got two kids. We say, oh, we want to do that. And then what you do is you look at your budget. And your budget looks like this. At a minimum, what I tell people is we got to get your income replaced. That is the very minimum. After that, if you want to add the rest of it, that is just going to get you more fully insured. But your minimum number should be enough money, enough life insurance that would allow your family, if you die, to replace what they were earning each month. For as long as it takes to get them financially independent. So if you're 30 years old, you might buy a 25 or 30 year term. If you're 40, you might buy a 20 year term. And what that means by buying that term, it's the length of time that the coverage remains level. All right. So, and the premium is level. So if you buy a 20 year term, you'll pay the same premium from age 40 to age 60. It'll renew. It goes up in price. The goal is by the time you get there, you've accumulated money. And if you do need insurance, it will be less, because you've got a lump sum, or maybe you've accumulated some property or whatever it may be. So that's the insurance question. All right, let's keep going. Next question, should I buy a home or should I continue renting? All right, so here's the way I've always looked at it. I've owned homes, I've rented, I've done everything under the sun. The reason you buy a home is not because it, you know, and I'm on a real estate show, and I'm not going to tell you that buying a home is a bad investment by any means like that. But don't view your home as your personal residence as an investment. What you do is you buy your home to begin with because you want to have freedom. All right, what is freedom? Freedom is I want to tear that wall out and I want to paint it purple. All right, or I want to add something to the back. And within reason, you can do whatever you want to do. It's also a place that you earn equity by paying the payment, and it offsets the total cost of living in a home. All right. So would you be better off buying a home and with all the cost in it versus renting? Well, there's a lot of financial considerations to determine that. But the biggest thing that you get by buying a home is you get the ability to be in charge. All right. And you can do whatever you want to do. You're not asking. If you want to, you know, work in the yard and put stuff up, that's fine. And you don't have the insecurity of prices going up. So if you rent, you don't know what's going to happen 10 years from now. You don't know what the landlord's going to do. You don't know if they're going to sell the house. You don't have any control. But if you buy the house, you get control. And so that's why most people buy. Now, we hear this all the time. You know, you bought that house, used to sell for $500,000. Now it sells for $1.5 million. Yes. And along the way, over that 15 or 20-year period, you paid a lot of money to be able to live there, and you got a lot of it back in the form of equity. And so that's the idea behind should I buy or continue renting. Everything goes back to financial considerations. Should you buy a home if it's going to break you? All right, when you get through closing, no. Should you buy a home that the mortgage payment bothers you in any way. No, all right. What you should do is you should go in. I always like to, you know, be conservative in the way I tell people, put 20% down, you know, if you can. If you can't, I'm not so opposed to it. But it also tells me that if you can't put the down payment down, then you're probably still at a point in your life that you need to get an emergency fund started. You need to be, you know, have a gap between your income and your outgo. And that's when you just may want to wait a little bit longer to be able to do it. You don't want to buy something that's going to be, anchor. All right. And so, but at the same time, I'm pro buying a house, but just be smart. And one of the rules that I've always told people is if you can afford the 15-year mortgage on it, which is a lower rate, then you can afford the house. And so if you're stretching the 30-year mortgage, you're probably buying too much. And so, okay. All right. We're going to continue going here. My name is Roy Mountlock Jr. We've got, one more segment, I guess, that we'll be talking 10 questions regarding your money that I get asked all the time. If you want to visit realmoneyradio.info, you can reach both of us. We'll be right back. All right, Roy Mountlock Jr. here, and we are at Real Money Radio. And if you want to reach us, Tanya is out today. If you've been tuning in with us, Tanya and I, Escobel, just got together, several months ago and started a show that involves all things finance, from real estate and investments and you name it. You can reach both of us at realmoneyradio.info, and you can also listen to the previous shows on the podcast. Today, I'm going solo. And in going solo, we're doing 10 questions I get asked, you know, and I get a lot of questions, you know, meeting with people. So the last one we talked about, should I buy or continue renting? The next one is, how much should I keep in an emergency fund and why do I need an emergency fund? So to start with, what is an emergency fund? An emergency fund is money that is set aside for things that will happen to you. All right. Did you hear that? Things that will happen. You say, well, hold on. What do you mean? Emergencies will happen. Something will happen. You're not immune to it. You're not invincible. Something will happen. You're going to lose a job. You're going to have an accident. Something's going to happen. You're going to get in your car and you're going to turn your car on and it's going to blow up. All right. You're like, oh boy, now I got to do this. And so it's part of a budget. You get the emergency fund set aside. Everybody says 3 to 6 months. It's kind of like 3 months if you're married and you're both working and you have stable incomes and they're similar. It could be 6 months if it's a single income person or if you've got one of the wage earners makes a lot more than the other. Should you have more if you're retired or self-employed? You know, the retirement emergencies are less if you're living off your retirement income. It tends to be steadier than losing a job. If you're self-employed, I would probably have not only a personal emergency fund, but I would have a lot of money set aside in case businesses turn the wrong direction, lose an account, whatever it may be. And so what it's an emergency fund for, it's to keep you from borrowing money. That's the first thing. It's to keep you from paying penalties by accessing retirement plans. You know, 59 and a half, you have some kind of emergency before you're 59 and a half and you get penalized on your retirement plans. And so what I would do is be thinking like that, the emergency fund, where do I put it? I put it in a money market. I typically put it in like a money market mutual fund. What that means is that you can get to it, but it's getting a little better rate than the bank. And it's easy to get to. I have all the emergency funds, all the bank accounts, everything that we do for our clients is tied to your checking account. So if you needed money, typically you're going to be able to get that emergency fund within a day or two, something like that. And it's getting a little bit better rate of return. So that's what I do when it comes to an emergency fund. How do I know? Here's another question. How do I know if my investments are too risky or not risky enough? Well, there are several things that we look at, but one of the things that I see, I meet with people all the time, and one of the biggest mistakes I see is they got their money everywhere. They got a 401k from this place they used to work. They got another 401k somewhere else. They got money, you know, in multiple investments and all that kind of stuff, and they don't have a plan. All right. And so then what happens is, or that I've even had people say, yeah, I've got more than one advisor. And I'm like, okay, well, that I understand that you think that's diversifying. But if the advisors don't know what the other one's doing, you could be putting your money in the same spots, no diversification, because no one knows. I can only do with what I know about. And so what I tell people is this: first thing we got to do is got to round up all your money. Find out what you have. You know, do you have retirement plans? I've seen people that left money in previous 401ks for 10, 15, 20 years. And guess what? It was sitting in a money market account. You know, it's been getting, when the rates were down to nothing, it was getting nothing. Just didn't pay attention to it. So one of the things you have to do in anything in life, if you pay attention to something, it will always improve. I don't care what it is, it always improves. Pay attention to your health, it improves. Pay attention to your money, it improves. So one of the things that I would recommend you do to begin with to find out is you round it all up, and we can do a review for you. And here's what we would do. We would look at asset allocation. What does that mean? Is it in the stock market, the bond market? Is it in the money markets? Is it in annuities? What is it in? All right, so we go from the most conservative, the most aggressive. Where's it at? We look at the asset allocation. How do we determine the best asset allocation? Two things. First thing is, when are you going to need the money? If you have a college kid going to college and they're going to college next year, you don't want to have all the money sitting in a S&P 500 account, and then the next thing you know, the market drops 30%, which it can, and you've got to pay tuition, and you got 30% less money. So your time horizon, the sooner you are to needing the money, we become less aggressive, and that's in the allocation. What is asset allocation? 75-25 stock bond. 25% is a little more conservative, 75% is more aggressive. Or is it 100% aggressive? You got a long time horizon. Is it you're pulling money now? We have a more conservative approach. We also want to find out what your risk tolerance is. What's risk tolerance? Well, all things being equal, if the market dropped 20% right now and you've got cash, what would you be thinking? Would you be saying, I got to get this money out? It may drop further. Or you say, hey, Roy, listen, I got 50 grand sitting on the sideline. This should be a great time to buy, right? Well, you're more aggressive in the way you think. You're more conservative if you're thinking about selling. And so then what we do is we take and we do diversification, all right? And diversification is we have things. I always use this example. If you were opening a stand at the beach, you could diversify your sales by selling sunglasses for sunny days and umbrellas for rainy days. There, how about that? You're happy. You always got something. What I like to do when I put people into investments, I like to have something that's going to make them happy. Oh, the stock market was down. Yeah, well, we got some bonds and an annuity over here. Stock market was up. Oh, we got some money in a growth fund. That's great. All right. So what we're doing is we're diversifying with the idea that you've got different things. Now, here's what I want to mention about what I do. What I do for people is I put them in things that long-term have had long-term track records. If you call me up and say, hey, I got a stock I want to buy, well, that's fine. If you want to buy it, just understand that if you buy it, you need to make the assumption that you, when you put the money in, it's gone. And if you're okay with it, because I doubt you've got inside information to be able to make that good decision on it. Let's go to a few more. Do I really need an estate plan if I'm not wealthy? Everybody has a will. The state will set it up for you. I can tell you right now, if you don't have something, it's a problem, and you're just leaving a problem behind for your family. If you've accumulated money, I recommend a living trust. It also includes financial power of attorneys, healthcare power of attorneys. So let's say you're single right now, and you get in a car accident. Wouldn't you want to have somebody that cares about you, have the ability to make the decisions on your life? Okay, that's your healthcare power of attorney. Wouldn't you want someone to be able to go and pay your bills so you don't get out of the hospital and your house has been foreclosed? All right. And I can tell you, if you go to the bank right now and say, hey, my brother's in the hospital and we need to get some money out. I said, well, do you have a financial power of attorney? I said, no, can't do it. All right. So that's what that is. You need to check your beneficiaries. I see beneficiaries, you know, divorces happen all the time, and the beneficiaries never get changed. So if you're tuning in right now, I hope this has been beneficial to you. Our goal on Sunday mornings is to give you some good information when it comes to your money. My name is Roy Matlock Jr. Tanya Escobel is my co-host. Tanya is out today, but she will be back. next week. And so you can visit realmoneyradio.info. We have podcasts. We have links to both of our websites. She has a real estate show. I also have the Roy Matlock Jr. Money and Business Hour that also airs on this channel. So if you want to check that out, we appreciate you listening. We'll talk to you next weekend.